Welcome to TR Talks, where your host, Team Rajpal, talks everything Toronto and GTA real estate, from buying, selling, leasing, investing, and rental management. An unfiltered conversation with industry experts helping you stay up to date with the market.
Hello, Ms. Geeta.
Xerxes, I know you can't wait to get into the topic for today, because I can sense this frustration and this anger. Why is the government looking for every way to raise money except the way they should be raising money?
Which is cutting their own salaries?
Well, I mean, how about revenue-based? You know, how about investing in things that will bring revenue to the province and to the country?
I think they need to start by being more accountable for the money that they already have.
Or that they've already sunk into other, you know, into a whole bunch of things that may not be seeing the return that they should be.
So if you haven't already guessed, this conversation has something to do with taxes.
That's right.
And we're specifically today talking about capital gain tax. So capital gain tax, no matter what you're reading as to what Ms. Freeland or Mr. Trudeau is telling you in the media, does apply to more Canadians than they think it does. So let's start off with what is capital gain tax. So let's say you have an asset. You bought the asset for $1,000. You've held on to it for, you know, a period of time, and now you're selling that same asset for, call it, $2,000. That net difference of $1,000, where it went up from $1,000 to $2,000, that is your capital gain. Okay? So the question is, what are capital gain taxes? Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about what were the taxes.
Well, first, just taking it back and saying, well, talk about that same example, what it used to be. So it's 1,000 went to 2,000, yeah. And then what is the inclusion rate? Because a lot of people, if you know, there's confusion around, oh my God, I'm paying taxes on that $1,000 that is the capital gains. And that is not the case. So maybe just to clarify what you are paying taxes on.
So actually, you are paying taxes on that $1,000,
but it's the inclusion. Yes, it's a percentage.
So let's say you have that increase from $1,000 to $2,000. The first thing what you're going to report is, what is the net amount? Okay, so what do I mean by that? So the gross amount was $1,000. That's how much the value of the asset went up. But then you may have had expenses in selling the product, or expensive when you first bought the product, whatever. So like, for example, in real estate, if you're selling your property and there's a capital gain, the real estate commissions is a tax write-off. The lawyer's fees is a tax write-off. Maybe you have penalties on your mortgage for dischargement. That might be a tax write-off. When you bought the property, you had lawyer's fees. The only thing that's not really, to the best of my knowledge, now keep in mind I'm not an accountant, is land transfer tax. So I don't think that can be written off.
So here's the disclaimer right here is anything that we're sharing right now and needs verification, it is something that you would go back to your accountant or tax lawyer. Yes.
Yeah. So basically, let's say, for example, that $2,000 product that you now sold had $200 worth of expenses associated with it when you bought and sold it. So now you're talking about a net $800 gain. So under the old rules, right, that $800, the first 50% was tax-free. The next 50% was added to your income. And whatever your marginal tax rate is, once it's added to your income for the year, that's the amount you'd pay income tax.
Exactly. So that inclusion rate was 50% of your capital gains.
Correct.
And it's not the entire amount that is being taxed.
So $400 goes straight into your account. The rest of the $400 is added to your income, whatever you're paying your marginal tax rate is. So let's say the highest tax rate in Canada is 54%. For argument's sake, let's just, in this example, say your marginal rate went up to 50%. So $200 out of that $400 you would pay would be tax. So therefore, you'd be left with $600 out of the $800 in total. Okay. Now, where have the rules changed? So first of all, in this example, the exact same thing would happen because it's under $250,000, and let's assume you're an individual. So in the past, whether you were an individual, whether you were a holding corporation, like this, these rules applied.
To everybody across the board.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now the rules have changed. So what they're saying is basically now, if you are an individual, so we're talking about people here, you, me, X, Y, and Z people. Let's say you make a sale on something that is up to $250,000 of capital gain, because we've just defined what capital gain is. Well, then the same old rules apply, right? The difference comes in when it's over $250,000, and it's specifically for the amount that is over $250,000. So let's say you sell something for $300,000. The first $250,000 is still as per the old rules. The next $50,000 is what we're talking about, which is what has changed. So what does that mean? So let's say, for example, I bought a condo, mm-hmm. and that condo was bought for $600,000. And now I'm selling it for, say, $800,000. Well, that would apply under the old rules because it's only a $200,000 gain. But now let's say that condo actually sold from $600,000 and went to $1 million, right? The first $250,000, so up to $850,000, is as per the old rules. 50% of that $250,000, so $125,000, goes straight into the account. This is, let's assume, all after expenses.
Yeah.
So $125,000 goes straight into the account. The other $125,000 is added to my income. Whatever I pay tax on that income is the amount I pay in tax, and the rest goes into my account. Okay? But now we're talking about from that $850,000 to $1 million, so that extra $150,000. So what they're saying is instead of it being that 50-50 rule, it's actually for that $150,000, the inclusion rate is now 66.7%.
Yep.
So instead of 50% of it, you're paying tax on 50%, you'd be paying tax on 66.7%. So that is where things have changed. Now, a lot of people might think, okay, well, you know, that's not really as bad as I think it would be. But really, if you really work out the math, it's a 32% increase. So when they stand up and they say, we're just asking them to pay a little bit more.
And I just want to add in there, when they're saying we're just asking them to pay a little bit more, the government makes it sound like it is the top 0.1% of the Canadian population that comes under that category, and that is actually the furthest from the truth, because 100%. It is the middle class that is being impacted. Because how many people have actually, and how many people have we helped that have taken a long time to put money aside to be able to build a real estate investment? Many people don't have 6, 8, 10, 15 investments. They have that one investment property, and they are hoping to be able to do something for their, you know, the future generation, and maximize, and their own retirement.
Pensions aren't what they were when you had a job in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Like, those pension plans don't exist today.
No, and so a lot of people are relying on the increase in value of their real estate investment, and we're obviously talking just about real estate, because the capital gains applies to other investments too. But it's just to say that, you know, when you look at it from that angle, like if it were just the large corporations and, you know, that 0.1%, you know what? Yeah, it's okay. You're talking to a small number of billionaires, or, you know, people that can afford to do all of that, sure. But this is impacting everybody and anybody that owns even one extra real estate to their name.
You know, the ironic part is that if you are in that elite, call it 0.1% of Canadians, the amount of things you could do to call it, let's call it what it is, circumvent that tax, you register yourself as a non-resident.
They're still going to do it. Yeah.
And it's not them. Like,
they're not the ones who are being impacted.
Because I stand up on stage and say the sky is red does not make the sky red. Like, at the end of the day, and that is the frustrating piece, it's they bring up these blatant numbers, All right. And that to me is the frustrating piece, because we've helped how many people? How many people work the not work the system to their advantage, but work the system to their advantage, work opportunities that they've worked hard for. And now you're telling them middle of the game, sorry, the rules have changed. And, you know, you may have read online about or heard about doctors and going up in arms. But a lot of these doctors, like, they set up corporations for themselves. So where is it different? Like, now the question really becomes, like, well, why? What does a corporation have to do with it? So this is where the differences lie. So if you're an individual, you still get that first inclusion of $250,000 at that old rate of 50%.
Which, to be fair, it is a significant amount
of
money.
No question about it. No question about it. But now we're talking about someone who's put, let's say, a property or stocks aside for a number of years, and now is going to circle around and go and sell it, maybe when they're retiring, when their income is a bit lower. Over a period of time, we can definitely add up the amount. It's a significant amount, right? But let's just switch gears a second here. So let's say now I'm not an individual. Let's say Xerxes has set up a holding company. And in that holding company, he has gone and bought assets, whether it be stocks, whether it be real estate. Let's just use real estate as an example. Now I'm going to use that same example of I bought that condo at $600,000, and now it's $1 million in when I'm selling it. That whole $400,000 is now subject to the 66.7%.
For those that have corporations.
For those who have corporations.
Yeah.
So that is a huge difference, and especially people like you and me who've set up holding companies, and for what? It's like self-employed individuals are in a position in which all they're trying to do in certain cases is move their properties into a holding company from a liability standpoint. And this is where, you know, people have not done it to get rid of tax. That's not the reason why they've done it. They've done it in order for them to protect their own assets for something they've worked extremely hard for.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is that what we'll find as well now, like, you know, it puts that downer on people. Like the government, of course, what are they doing? They're raising billions of dollars to inject, as they say, back into the housing industry because supply is at an all-time low. And, you know, like Rajiv was mentioning this morning, which is so true, you look at where the sales activity has been over the last 10 years, and then you look at the immigration numbers in the last 10 years, and everything is not keeping pace. But now, looking at this money, the revenue they're going to generate, putting it back into the housing market, now it's that question comes up, like, where is the day-to-day, where's the regular investor's mindset at? Not the people that are going to be in that 0.1%, but the people that we're dealing with every day, the ones that are saying, we want to get a leg up for our kids. We want to make sure that when we retire, we do have something to fall back on. But now there's a little bit of that, you know, they're like, well, why? Why are we going to do it?
Well, I think this is really where speaking to a professional on how you structure your investment is even more important now, more than ever. But here's the piece that actually gets, and this is the thing I think not a lot of people are thinking of down the road. Like people are looking at themselves, like investors are looking at themselves going, oh my God, here's another tax bill. But here's what's going to happen over time. You're going to be in a scenario where certain people are going to say, you know what, I'm not going to invest in a big ticket item because I'll buy my $10 stock or $100 stock and sell it when it's $300. And then none of this will apply to me.
Yeah, you'll sell it right when it gets to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
But a big ticket item like real estate that has the power of, you know, jumping mm-hmm. 250, 300, 400,000, there's going to be people hesitating to do that, which is understandable, right? Yep. When you put more barriers in place that the government insists on, then people are going to think twice about it. So how does that affect the market? Well, what's going to happen is builders lowering their prices?
Nope.
Okay. What are builders doing? Raising their prices, right?
That's right.
Because we have this beautiful word called inflation on the other side of this coin. So you have builders raising their prices, and there's still an affordability problem. But you removing certain investors from a marketplace does not necessarily make it more affordable, because at the end of the day, the cost to enter is so high already. So now all of a sudden, you have less investors investing. You have, therefore, you're removing the private marketplace out of the system potentially in order for the government to come in. Well, I'm going to take you back to a podcast that we talked about a couple of months ago or weeks ago, where Ms. Freelance stood up and said, rental housing, $1,600 for a 300-square-foot apartment?
Yeah.
$500, $5 per square foot on rent. If I could charge $5 a square foot, I wouldn't care if capital gains was in a scenario of 66% across the board, because at the end of the day, my investments would be performing from the other side in a very different manner. So when you remove those private investors from the market, it is, if people don't think that this is going to affect them, i.e. renters, tenants, you're sadly mistaken. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but this will go through the pipeline. Remember, the cheaper it is for everybody to get in, it, the cheaper it remains for everyone.
So here's the other thing, and I'm just, you know, you may think differently, but I'm also looking at it as, the ones that have, so the tax starts right at the get-go, or the increased tax starts at the get-go for those that have corporations.
Yeah.
The thought process behind that is, like, who has the corporations? It is typically people that have several investments.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody just has one investment, they're pretty much, you know, they're the one-off cases, and they are a lot of our investor clients. They're not necessarily in that 0.1%. You would think and you would assume that the ones with the corporations are also, they include that very small percentage.
Correct.
But there are others too that are a part very much of this growing middle class. So I think the good part of this is, you may not agree, is that initial $250,000 for somebody that has that one-off or maybe two investment properties, it is going to be marginally less of an impact for somebody that is paying now 66.7% on anything over the
$250,000. I 100% agree.
Okay, so they are looking at the ones that have the bandwidth to own several investment properties.
I get where you're coming from. And I definitely do agree with that. Majority of the people, the number of people setting up a corporation to have one property, It's
few and far between.
Agreed. So the question really becomes, you know, how will this affect the marketplace? I think we're going to have this knee-jerk reaction from a lot of people. I was reading an article the other day. There's tons of people for secondary properties like the Cottage Country.
Mm-hmm.
That's now you and I are talking about, call it investment condos as an example. There's a lot of people who bought a cottage or own a cottage because of they inherited it, for example.
Yep.
So, you know, this is where when they say it doesn't affect many Canadians, this is part of our culture in this country.
Owning to a own cottage,
it is part of your culture. So, you know, this is the issue I have with it. When you stand up and you say X when it's really Y. But at the end of the day, do I agree with your initial statement of, you know, Is it going to affect the people who have multiple properties more so than it will the one-off? I think it will, for sure. But again, we have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, the solution to this whole issue. We've said it from day one, is to build more. It's not to tax more. It's not to do X, Y. Build more.
Mm-hmm.
Build more. Open up properties for people to buy. Create new structures. Like, I don't understand why they're so hesitant to extend amortization periods. I know no one wants to pay for a property for 40 years, but that allows you to get into, there is a difference between saying,
well, it is coming for first time buyers.
It is, But you have to buy a brand new property.
For that to happen.
I would like to know, in the GTA where we have a housing crisis, how many builders are allowing you to put less than 20% down?
And not only that, I just met with somebody today and they were like, wait a minute. Oh, brand new homes are more expensive than resale? And yes, they are. So it is not the way it used to be several years ago. The cost of construction, everything down the chain supply, the supply chain has become so hard. It is a lot more expensive to build a brand new property. And so who's getting impacted by that? It is the buyers. And so first-time buyers are more than likely to buy resale. And so if they can't take advantage of that in the resale market, well, then who is it benefiting? And salaries are not going up the same way or at the speed of which home prices are going up.
And this is where, I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to us or to this conversation and looking at me and going, well, we all know where he stands. My stance is simply don't sell something that you're not really selling. So don't tell the world you're doing X and, you should get a pat on your back because you're doing something without understanding. You're a politician who's standing there and your job is to get votes. Congratulations. You're trying to do that. But at the end of the day, you're not really addressing the problem that you're representing the people for. So when I say that, I mean, like saying, oh, we're going to extend amortization periods for first-time buyers if they buy new builds. Ask how many, why don't you work with builders to create a program where the builder does not need 20% down? Because the moment you need 20% down, then guess what? You can already get a 30-year amortization period. The barrier to entry in properties, especially in the GTA, and we're talking about the GTA, they're talking about Canada, but at the end of the day, if this is where majority of your population is coming and you have first-time buyers here who need to get into the market, because let's be honest, once you're in the market, it becomes simpler. Would you agree with that?
100% it becomes simpler. And it's like we tell all the tenants that we meet, you are absolutely paying a mortgage. It's just that you're not paying your own. That's it.
So then the question really becomes, your biggest barrier to entry is that down payment. And that needs to be the focus. That needs to be the solution. I don't see why, with the population that we have in Canada, why this has become such an issue. Like, they should have seen this coming 30 years ago.
Yeah,
and look at the timeline of construction. I mean, we were at dinner with a client the other day. Mm-hmm. How many years did she say the 404 has been working on that extra lane? One lane.
I know. I mean, now we're totally digressing because we could just do a whole podcast on what is wrong about the infrastructure in all of the GTA and beyond. But I think as well that just understanding, I think, from a real estate perspective and for anybody that is still considering, I'm saying still considering, there are investors out there. There are investors that have been very happy with the outcome of their investments in real estate, and there will be those that are going to consider it in the future as well. And what it comes down to is, like you said, there's knee-jerk reactions, announcements are made, and people either speed up or come to a complete stop, whether it's buyers or sellers or investors, based on what is being announced or what is coming out there. Ultimately, at the end of the day, once something becomes the new norm, people get comfortable with it, and then they move forward and they move on.
Right.
And that's likely what will happen here as well. But I think it's just important to understand, have conversations with professionals that can guide you through. It doesn't mean real estate as an investment is not a good idea anymore. It always is.
Capital gain tax was not the reason why people did or did not invest in real estate. So, I mean, that argument can be made all day long. But at the end of the day, first of all, if you do own multiple pieces of real estate, and we're not talking about your principal residence at the moment, and you are listening to this and going, wait a second, like, I want to get out, don't don't just make that decision. Like Geeta said, speak to a professional. I think the first call you need to make is to your accountant. That's the first call you need to make. And also to your real estate team, if it's in real estate, to understand, okay, well, what is my portfolio worth? Don't make assumptions. Just actually find out what the truth is. And then go from there. And maybe you do it in a more structured way. Maybe you do it in a different way. But at the end of the day, the main thing is understand what the issue is. Nine times out of ten, the argument would still be made hold. The market is not where it potentially is going. And that's going to come, whether it's weeks, months, years from now. It is going there. So, you know, the biggest asset to real estate is the leverage. That's where it's at. So mm-hmm. still use that in your as your advantage. Make wise decisions. As we've always said, our job is to help educate our clients, educate the public, in order for them to make the best decisions for themselves and their families.
That's right. And so today's podcast, I think we got so quickly into it, we didn't even announce right in the beginning that we were talking about capital gains and the impact capital gains will have, or the new legislation, which I believe is it's the end of June. That's
when it's slotted for. We'll see what happens.
And we'll see. I mean, is it actually going to happen as of the end of June or not? Likely it is. But for any questions or more information on this topic, or for requests for any new topics that you'd like us to cover here at TR Talks, we are happy to do that. And as always, thank you for listening and thank you for following our podcast.
Have a great day.
TR Talks is hosted by members of Team Rajpal with RE/MAX. Rajiv Rajpal and Xerxes Barucha are brokers. Geeta Rajpal and Nicholas Ip are sales representatives, all registered with the Toronto Regional Real Estate Board, Real Estate Council of Ontario, and Canadian Real Estate Association. This podcast is for informational purposes only and not for financial or investment advice. Please do your own due diligence.